From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 10th day of May 2019. It's USDA Report Day. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the numbers that USDA released this morning, a surprising trend line yield for corn, and then some really big numbers as it relates both to the ending stocks for corn and soybeans. We'll do that not only with Todd Hubbs from the University of Illinois, but also with Seth Meyer, who is responsible for putting some of those together at USDA's World Agricultural Outlook Board. Of course, we'll discuss what the impact of those numbers and the trade negotiations that have failed in Washington, D.C. this week have had on the marketplace in Chicago. Mike Zuzlo will be here from globalanalytics.biz out of Atchison, Kansas. And as we wrap up our time together, we'll take a look at the big factor, the weather, and whether producers will be able to continue to plant corn and soybeans across the whole of the United States with Eric Snodgrass. He is from Agrible. And it all happens on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
University of Illinois agricultural economist Todd Hubbs is now here to discuss the report released this morning from the World Agricultural Outlook Board. The WASD figures are World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimates from USDA. This is a monthly report, although this one is the first one that takes a look at the new crop spring corn and soybeans. It was a real surprise that USDA managed to come out with a 176 national average yield. I don't think anybody expected it to be on trend line at this point.
No, I mean, the model they use, and I mean, they stated in the report, it's based on normal planting in mid-May. I don't know where they're seeing this normal planting pace, because we're well behind the normal corn crop planting place. Planting pace all through the Corn Belt. I expect to be 20 plus points behind it on Monday. You would think they would fade that yield a little bit. I don't know what they know that the rest of the world doesn't know, and maybe they're just waiting to see how it plays out, but it is a surprise.
And the work you and Scott Irwin have been doing on some of this planting pace and what that really means, looked at the model that USDA uses, and while you're using a May 20 date, the normal planting date should be May 15 for them.
Yeah, no, that's right. I mean, we did some calculations, and we thought maybe a trend, if we continue on this kind of late planting we're currently on, be around 170 bushels an acre as a base, right? Summer weather will determine the yield for the most part, but as a launching point, it's below 176 for sure if we see the kind of late planting across the Corn Belt that we're currently seeing, particularly in Illinois and Indiana and Michigan. I mean, all through the Eastern Corn Belt. I don't see them getting in around here anytime soon. So I expect a pretty good chunk of late planting, and I think their trend yield should reflect that.
It does not, and consequently neither do the midpoints.
That's right.
They're down at what, 330 for corn and 810 for soybeans?
Yeah, 330 for corn and 810 for soybeans for 1920. I mean, we're still a long ways out. You can take issue or umbrage with any number of the use categories for 1920, but the base part is the supply we're going to be facing moving into the next marketing year, and it just seems like the corn supply should be slightly lower at this point.
Yeah, they have the ending stocks at 2.485 billion for the end of the year, 2019-20.
Yeah, for corn they do. I mean, the use numbers are what they are. The export numbers at 2.275 billion bushels, I don't have a super large problem with that. I have more of a problem with their current marketing year, 2.3 billion bushel export number. I don't know how you can sit on that number when they just found out 236 million more bushels of corn out of Brazil and Argentina, record corn crops down there. And their currencies are so much lower. I mean, this competition's stiff, and we've been seeing weekly sales being pretty weak. And we take all this escalation of the tariff war. Now, China isn't sitting on a lot of outstanding sales of corn, but they are sitting on 18 million bushels of corn, outstanding sales. I think the probability of those not being delivered just went up dramatically. And, you know, we're not seeing really strong sales numbers in corn right now. So I don't know what they're looking at in that way. I could see that number weakening as well before it's all said and done.
Okay. Were you surprised with the ending stocks? I think now 995 million, almost a billion bushels for soybeans for this year. And next year at 970. So they did manage to increase the ending stocks for this year.
Yeah, they lowered soybean exports by 100 million bushels. Now, we've got 445 million bushels of outstanding sales in soybeans this marketing year, and China is 272 million of those bushels. So depending on how this whole trade fight plays out, will those get delivered? Maybe, maybe not. I'd lean toward no in all probability. And we're seeing large crops in Brazil and Argentina as well, and soybeans. They raised Argentinian production by about 36 million bushels. So there's still some downside on that soybean export number if we don't get some resolution to this trade deal. This thing could get ugly in a hurry for soybeans. You know, above a billion bushels of carryout is not crazy talk. It could get a lot worse. So we'll see how this all plays out through the summer here. But yeah, they lowered the exports 100 million bushels, put it at 995. But there's a lot of downside risk in that number because of the amount of outstanding sales China currently is holding. Because the uncertainty on soybeans is all in the export number. And really, that's out of our hands when you're thinking about planning about pricing. We've already run down so far in soybeans. I mean, we 750 cash prices in some place. I mean, it's brutal. There's a lot to talk about in these numbers. And it feels like corn may be a little bit low based on the supply scenario. Soybeans, no. It looks like we're in trouble.
Thanks so much.
Yes, sir.
That's Todd Hubbs, of course. He's an agricultural economist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. Now we're joined by Mike Zuzulo, our regular Friday afternoon analyst. He's from globalanalytics.biz out of Atchison, Kansas. How did trade in Chicago react to these numbers and to the whole trade event that happened and took place over the last 15 to 18 hours in Washington, D.C. between China and the United States?
You know, I think the trade in general is more akin to how we feel in the farm group and the agriculture sector than maybe any time in the last 6 or 8 months, Todd. And I think it's shock. I mean, I think that the fact that we're going to see the grain markets probably fall only in the single digits when you're talking about a 32-year high in corn ending stocks for 2019-2020 and a world wheat production record that is going to be over 6% bigger than last year, even with smaller acres and drought in many, many areas of the big wheat production belts around the globe. I think the trade sat there with those numbers and essentially said, what do I do now, especially if I'm a short? How can I get any bigger than this? And how can I be fed with any bigger numbers with the kind of weather that we're looking at in the United States? And then you throw on top of that the kind of breakdown, for lack of a better word, between the U.S. and China negotiations here. My understanding is they're back on a plane heading to China a day and a half early, but President Trump has issued the order to USDA Ag Secretary Perdue find a way to purchase through the use of some of the collected tariff money from China, some agricultural products from U.S. farmers to go ahead and use as aid around to poor countries around the world. So I think shock and awe is probably the only two things that come to my mind after seeing both the report and what we've seen in the U.S.-China trade negotiations developments.
Yeah, I think you probably have thought about this for a bit, but this aid package, that could be problematic for acreage, at least for soybeans, it would seem, maybe for corn as well.
Yes, and I think it goes back to, is this an aid package that needs to go through Congress and needs to go through a Congress that's trying to impeach in part President Trump and defeat him already in the 2020 election? And so that adds a whole nother element of complexity. And this is how it unfortunately usually unfolds when it comes to trade negotiations that go wrong and tariffs that take too long to get pulled back off again. And I think that's unfortunately what we're going to have to struggle with the next 20 to 30 days. Does that mean prices need to keep going lower? No, I think, in fact, you probably have a scenario building here. If we do get these rains that are slated in the next 5 days again for the central part of the country, there are producers, not just in the Dakotas, talking about prevent plan at this point, but between the low prices, the high crop insurance levels that they took this year, and Mother Nature, they're not going to fight taking prevent plant this year. And it's probably going to be one of those years where we look back and say, gosh, what a historical year it was for producers to take prevent plant if Mother Nature deals the cards that we may see here in the next week. I mean, we have lost our main highway again to St. Joe, Missouri, because the levee that broke 2 months ago is back out again and it's flooded that plain again. So we have, you know, no way to get across the Missouri River at this point and drive to St. Joseph, Missouri, but you sure couldn't tell that by the trade action this week.
Yeah, so the weather will be the primary mover, unless, I suppose, there is a retaliatory action by China, and we have to watch for that.
Yeah, I think the biggest likelihood next week, if North Korea steps up and ramps up any kind of military action or missile technology action, is that we're probably going to have to lay low in the soybeans, especially given the fact that they actually closed better in percentage terms on Friday than the corn did. And that, I think, is because, again, the mechanical algorithmic quant funds look at USDA data at face value, and the U.S. ending stocks for soybeans at 970 million bushels was less than the near 2.5 billion that the trade gave received from USDA. So the funds are still buying beans and selling corn after this report, even though the fundamentals would say don't do that, because we know African swine fever is going to hurt us now. And this is the shoe that dropped at the late part of the week that I think is responsible for the majority of the price break in the market. And that was the ag attaché finally admitting we're going to lose 8.5 million tons of soybean imports for 1920 because of African swine fever. When you and I talked 25 days ago or 20 days ago on a commodity week, and I'm shaking my head saying, why are they not lowering this, saying that compound feed's going to offset it? So that was a shock to the market this week that we still have to work through.
Hey, thanks so much. We'll find out more from you again next week.
Sounds great. Thanks, Todd.
Mm-hmm. Mike Zuzulow is with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting. On this Friday afternoon, we're now joined by Seth Meyer. He's the chairman of the World Agricultural Outlook Board. While much of the information that's collected for crop production reports comes from USDA, everything that is put out in the WASD is worked through the World Agricultural Outlook Board. Thank you, Seth, for joining us this afternoon. Let's start with a couple of questions. First, did today's WASD report incorporate any of the new trade and tariff policies that have been announced in the last 12 to 14 hours?
So those tariff and trade policies are against Chinese imports. So we went in without knowing where we knew that those things would be put in place. We don't know of any retaliation when we are in lockup. So I have to tell you, I don't know if there's been retaliation. I've talked to you as I just come out. But as far as the Chinese the U.S. actions on China, those don't necessarily influence us. It is only how the Chinese might respond in terms of following through on outstanding sales in terms of things like soybeans.
Right. And so there has been no retaliatory action as of our conversation at 12:40 Central Time. The second question.
If you've got just a second here, I think it's important for your folks to understand that we always assume policy in place. Now, we know that speculation about trade deals influences prices. You can see that anybody that follows the hog market can see that. So obviously we incorporate those things because they have a very real and direct effect. But on things like trade, a lot of folks out there, when they think about, say, U.S. pork exports for the coming year, would it might include a Japanese trade deal. Well, no such trade deal yet exists, so therefore we don't incorporate it.
So speculation, that might be in the marketplace you incorporate, but trade deals and actual impact you do not.
That's right. So price effects that you can observe in the marketplace, those are realities. A trade deal with Japan isn't necessarily a reality yet, right? Maybe it could happen, but those are not things which we speculate on. And we take the same approach throughout the WASDE on different features, which is we also assume normal weather going forward.
And how did you get to that point this time around with the 176 trend line yield for corn?
So again, we use what is not a linear trend. Some folks will throw a linear trend in there and say USDA is too low or too high. It's not a pure trend of past yields. It's a normal weather adjusted yield trend. So it assumes normal weather, and we're not past the point where planting progress tends to affect, we're not at the point yet where planting progress tends to affect our thoughts about yields. And further, I think you could argue that relationship has broken down. We've made adjustments in the past. I think I want to call out the 2008 crop year, where we had delays in planting, and yet we had, at the time, record yields. And then you also have a year like 2012, where planting progress was well advanced. And we all know what happened in that year. So I think that relationship has broken down. It's too early to make those kinds of adjustments within our thoughts about yields. And I think folks need to take one other perspective on this when it comes to perspective. You may be working your way around to acreage. And when you think about that, the carryout increase that we published today year over year, you could assume a 2 million acre lower planted area and still have flat stocks year over year. Okay, so there's a lot of corn out there, and there is an error involved in prospective plantings by NASS, million and a half acres plus or minus. A 3 million acre change would be absolutely enormous relative to history in terms of their normal accuracy. But we have a big increase in stocks year over year, and so there can be an error in acreage. You still have an increase in stocks year over year.
I have one final question, and this one is posed by Scott Irwin more than anything else. And I did this on Twitter, and of course I was upstairs and talked to him here too, which yep. is given your 176, and is that trend for you or is that below trend for you first?
That is that is our normal weather-adjusted trend yield.
So that is a trend yield. Just double-checking.
Yeah,
so,
not pure linear trend. You know, it's our normal yeah. weather-adjusted trend.
And so your models would adjust at May by May 15, right?
We would take a look at that. Now, again, that relationship has broken down a bit. And again, I'll go back to, and again, I believe it was 2008, delayed plantings. Start cutting area or yield and making adjustments, and turns out to be the opposite side of that, right? Start cutting area and so I think that relationship has both broken down, and it's too early to make that call.
In 2008, did we get the crop planted after May 15th fairly quickly?
I'd have to go back and look. I'm drawing on my memory here. I can provide you with some follow-up. My memory is suspect, but I know we made some adjustments early and got burnt. You know, I think it's a good debate to have. I think it's a good debate to have on what acreage might be, but I will call out the fact that we have big increases, 300 million bushel increase in carryout stocks in 1920 under those assumptions. So you have to get some pretty negative assumptions out there before you start drawing down stocks year over year. Could that happen? Sure. We could take a big yield hit and have lower acreage than prospective plantings suggests. But that's what you got to do in order to get down to carry to drawing down those carryout stocks in 1920.
Hey, thanks so much for taking the time with me. I appreciate it.
All right. Talk to you later.
That's Seth Meyer. He is the chairman of the World Agricultural Outlook Board. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org. On this Friday, let's check the weather forecast. We're now joined by Eric Snodgrass. He is from Agrible. I think we've got a lot of ground to cover. Did I hear, and maybe you can confirm this, that this last 12 months has been as wet as we've had?
Yeah, we've got a 125-year record across the country, and that specific 12-month time period, so from May to April, the one we just had from May 18 to April 19, that was the wettest on record. So we're smashing records across the country, and you're right, there's so much we could talk about weather. I don't think your show is over an hour, is it? We could just keep going with all the craziness that's going on.
Yeah, this part of it isn't.
Yeah.
At least, but where'd the most recent rainfall hit?
Yeah, well, we've been soaked everywhere from the Texas to Louisiana coast all the way up through the Midwest, through the Central Plains, and even over to the Eastern Corn Belt. There are places in Kansas that have received over 10 inches of rain in the last 4 or 5 days. I heard this morning that some of the public schools in Houston are shut down on flooding. I mean, we've just got places that have been absolutely drenched. And in addition to that, quite a bit of severe weather across the South with this most recent system. You know, I was a bit surprised. If you would have asked me 2 days ago how much rain we should expect in kind of East Central Illinois out of that previous system, I would have said we could have gotten anywhere from a half to three quarters of an inch. I checked my gauge the next morning after that storm came through, and I had 1.8 at my house in Mahomet. So this rain has been extremely problematic, and it's kicking the can down the road for when people are going to get into the fields. It's always next week, and we're pretty deep into the time where we should have a lot of this crop planted. So the rain has been a problem, that's for sure.
Yeah. Well, what about next week?
Well, the thing was, we talked about this last week. We saw this drier time period settling in for parts of the Western Corn Belt and parts of the Central Corn Belt. I put Illinois kind of in the central part of the Corn Belt. And we saw this coming, and we said, hey, it's going to be a little bit of a drier time period, but it's dry compared to average. And we're right now at one of the wettest time periods of year, just climatologically. So what's going on here is we've got a system that's coming up over the weekend. It's going to be here across the southern half of Illinois by tomorrow, midday tomorrow. So what was looking like a drier time period, we got to deal with some rain tomorrow. And then there's actually two chances of getting rain next week across Illinois, actually across the whole of the Corn Belt. So it's dry compared to climate, but it's still any little bit of rain pushes us out of the fields even farther. So this is this little pattern's not shutting down anytime soon.
Any chance the pattern will change and be drier by the time we get to the end of the month?
Well, the problem is with the cooler weather that's coming in over the next few days, okay, any drying time periods we have, we're not going to have those high evaporation rates where we've got windy, hot, dry conditions. So it's going to take a while. So yes, if the pattern is going to change, well, unfortunately, it looks like around the 18th of the month, we're going to go back over to that pattern where there's a trough in the southwestern United States and a ridge over the southeast. And that particular pattern is one where the Gulf of Mexico is just, it's tapped and we got moisture coming out of it. And it's just going to go back into a stormy time period for the midsection of the country. And we kind of see that potentially lasting through much of the rest of the month of May. So I'm curious where May will end up in the record books in terms of precipitation, that's for sure.
Let's come back to the present, because it's been really cold, I think, in some of the wheat-growing regions of the nation.
Yeah, we've got frost and freeze warnings out for parts of Nebraska, getting into parts of Kansas. And so we're going to have to watch to see what kind of how cold it gets and what the duration is of the cold weather to see if it does any damage to the wheat. So this will be coming up, you know, it was last night, but then again today and tonight, we're going to have to see how long they spend below freezing, how cold it gets. And by the way, it snowed in Colorado yesterday, not in the mountains. I'm talking about on the plains. I saw some graduation pictures out there where they were doing it all out in the snow. So this has been a tumultuous time period for weather as we talk about spring 2019.
Do we have any new outlooks for the summer months?
Well, we do. So around the beginning of every month, we get all of our new long-range global models that come out. And so they start trickling in after about the fifth of the month. And there's pretty good agreement among the models that we're going to see a cool and wet summer right now for the Midwest. Now, the question is, how accurate are these models? And do they do a great job predicting that far out? And to be honest with you, the answer is no. It's interesting that all of the models are seeing the same thing. And most of that is probably driven by the fact that the Pacific Ocean is quite warm, both in the central Pacific and just off the west coast. There is a little cool spot there, but it's not large enough to really cause concern. So you look at those things and realize that the models were initialized with that, and you're like, oh, okay, well, of course they're going to say it's going to be a wet summer. But correlation between spring weather and summer weather, here it is, it's 0.03. So when you look at that number, you realize, well, you can't take a look at what happened this spring and try to assume what's going to happen this summer. So I think what we're going to have to do, Todd, is we're just going to have to live for a while in this two-week forecast window where we keep our eyes out that far to kind of see how weather stresses continue to impact 2019.
Hey, thanks so much.
Yeah, thank you.
That, of course, is Eric Snodgrass. He is with Agrible. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason.